The following message was recorded at the No Regrets Men's Conference. More information about the conference is available at noregretsconference.org. Feel free to make copies of this message for others, but please do not charge for those copies or alter the content in any way without permission.
Great. Good to be here with you guys this morning. You guys enjoying it so far? A great day. I look forward to this every year. Just a little bit about myself. My wife and I, we were missionaries in Russia for about 8 years, and then we came back in 2004 to start a church up in West Bend called Kettlebrook. Hey, I have to admit, when they wrote me and said, hey, we'd like you to give a seminar on raising boys on purpose, I felt a little underqualified for it. I have three boys. Greg has four. We thought about calling this How to Raise Seven Boys by Two Bald Guys. I didn't know if that would get a great response. And, you know, I felt a little underqualified because we had just started randomly drug testing our 16-year-old boy. You know, so I'm like, I don't know. But thankfully, I knew someone who could help me. My daughter had just started, my 19-year-old daughter had just started dating this fine young man who belongs to a family who helped us start and plant Kettlebrook Church. Greg has been a small group leader. He's a worship leader. He's on an elder board. Our families do life together, and it's weird. When I was writing this message, one night, my daughter was driving over to their house, to Greg's house, to drop something off because she's dating his son, Tyson. His son, Evan, just stopped by my house to pick up my son, Luke, because they're going to a movie together. And my son, Matthew, was over at his house running around the neighborhood with a pack full of boys. And I'm like, this is just amazing. You may think that's weird, but we love it. We love doing life together, and I'm glad that Greg is able to be here. These are my kids. It's hard to see. They are typical pastor's kids, bored out of their mind at the church picnic. Just so you know, we're normal.
Yeah. So, and these are my kids. Like Mike said, I have four boys. Thank you. That's great. This is a posed picture. This isn't what they're normally like. There was another picture that I was going to try. You can see they all have curly hair. I've got a picture where they've all got their hair froed out, but they decided that I shouldn't choose that one. So this is the one that I did. But I just want to welcome you guys. This is such a great day. Something that I noticed this morning, I was in the main session this morning, and you're there and you're hearing all these guys singing loud and you feel all this adrenaline, all this rush. And I was thinking, this is like a mountaintop experience. This is like the best it can be. And now we're kind of coming back down into the trenches, right? This is where we decide what we do with the day-to-day lives. I'm assuming you guys either have boys, you're in the lives of boys, you might have boys on the way, you might have grandsons, whatever it might be, you have an interest in raising boys. So, like I said, my wife and I are raising these four guys. They're all gifted very differently. They all have very different temperaments. But our intent is to help them understand how to use those gifts so that they can become the best men that they can possibly be. So this morning, we were listening to Crawford talk, and I was really wishing we could listen to his talk before I even prepared my talk, because it just gave me all these other ideas. But he was talking about the fact that there's no such thing as a passive relationship, right? Our relationships with our boys are active, whether we're actively involved in them or not. If we're involved in them, we're raising them, hopefully on purpose, and that purpose, there's some goal that we're striving for, right? That's what a purpose is. If we don't raise our boys on purpose, we're really raising them by accident. Right? But that still means there's an active relationship. It just happens to be that we're actively letting them find things and figure things out on their own, which is not what we want for them. So, I don't know if you wanted to bring up, Mike, our next point there.
So to speak, of being fathers of boys. And so we developed an acronym we call ACTION. All boys need action, right? And you've all been boys. So no need further to explain that acronym. But each one of these is going to talk about something. They need adventure, consequences, tradition, involvement, obligation, and the last one is nobility. So we're just going to walk through these one at a time. The first one is adventure.
Yeah. So starting with adventure, like Mike said, we've all been boys, right? We all need adventure in our lives, something that we can get excited about, something that gets our adrenaline flowing. And we as fathers or guardians, uncles, whatever we might be to those boys, we need to make it possible for adventure to happen. We need to be intentional about that, like Mike and Kara did last summer. Ferdoon, if you would hit play for us. For watching, I'll just share. This past summer, Mike and Kara invited my son Keaton, who is the guy with the red sleeves here, on an adventure in Kentucky, and they did some zip lining. And if you think about what zip lining really is, you're basically hanging, like Mike said, 4,000 feet, traveling across. I don't know if you could see how far down they were looking, but you don't have your feet on the ground. That's an adventure, right? You know, our American society has become so hung up on the notion of safety to the point where our kids can't even run around and chase each other at school to play tag. You know, we're tending to bubble wrap our boys so that they stay safe. The kind of adventure that we see when you're hanging thousands of feet above the ground isn't the kind of adventure that has safety written all over it. In fact, sometimes adventure requires us as parents to have to sign a waiver form, right? Adventure involves risk. So why adventure? Why is it important? I think that, you know, adventure is really ingrained into all of us. And if we're not having adventures, it's probably because we're either suppressing it in ourselves or somebody else is suppressing it for us. Adventure was once a part of everyday life. You didn't have to go out to find adventure. So here's an example. My wife's grandpa tells a story of his ancestors, and I don't remember how many generations back, but not too many. He owns a farm in Iowa, and his ancestors, a 15-year-old and a 17-year-old brothers, had to go across the river and clear the land. They had to build a cabin for themselves, survive the winter by themselves. Once spring came, they had to clear the land so that the family farm could start. And once that was done, they would send word and the rest of the family would come over. 15 and 17, that's adventure. Now, we don't get adventure like that every day anymore, right? I mean, the family farm is already settled, so we don't need to do that kind of thing. So we, as those who are raising boys, we have to make every opportunity available for our boys to be able to have adventure. And those adventures oftentimes need to be outside of our own protection. They have to experience their own adventures. Now, we introduce adventure to our kids early on. And this was really done by taking them out on everyday life, going shopping, changing the oil, mowing the lawn. They get to see the decision-making process and see the things that are done. Well, you know, shopping isn't really an adventure until they're old enough to walk to the cereal aisle themselves and pick out their own cereal. It becomes an adventure. And so it just becomes this progressive thing. Now, obviously, I don't know how old the boys are that you're dealing with. Some of them are young. Some of them are already grown. But we still need to offer opportunities for our kids to have those adventures. So some examples of what we've done to allow our kids to have adventures is, and Mike's going to share this a little bit too, but our kids would go out to the shed and they would make swords. One day I went out to our shed and I found that my not very inexpensive copper tubing was hammered flat into these swords that my kids were using for sword fighting. But that's an adventure for them. You know, having gun wars with airsoft guns, rock climbing, being able to walk to the store themselves, using the stove in the oven. My 12-year-old, who you saw on the zip line, loves to cook. And he has an opportunity to just go out in the kitchen and experiment. He does it by himself. I don't have to be there to help him do that. It's an adventure for him. Our kids have gone winter camping by themselves. My oldest, my 18-year-old, has gone on a night hike by himself. It's an adventure. And just this past summer, he also planned a canoe trip with some of his friends where they took an entire week, I don't remember what river it was, up north of Minocqua, the Flambeau. And they spent a whole week canoeing. It was an adventure. So you're going to find that as we build these progressive opportunities for our kids to have adventures, it teaches things into their lives automatically. I mean, we need to be intentional, but these adventures can teach for us. So I asked my boys, what kind of lessons have you learned? What were the advantages that having the opportunity to have these different adventures, what opportunities are there? So these are some things that they shared with me. They said, it gets them off the technology and out of doors. It fosters creativity. It forces resourcefulness. Generates curiosity. Now, I found a quote from Albert Einstein, and he said this. He said, you know Albert Einstein, the brilliant guy, I have no special talents. I am only passionately curious. We want our boys to be curious. Adventure jumpstarts the imagination. It builds problem-solving skills. It helps them find out who they are and what they love. It shows that you think them to be trustworthy. And then this one is mine. It teaches dependence on God, right? When they're having these adventures, they have to learn how to be independent from us. But we all know that once you become independent, you realize how hard it is to depend on yourself and realize that you need to depend on God. So I know that allowing our kids to have adventures sometimes can be scary because we have to release control. But we have to remember the fact that life is an adventure. And we want our kids to be ready for those adventures. So these little adventures that we allow our kids to have, they just become a trial for life. And there are things that our boys are never going to forget.
So in our family, we're always on an adventure. So we've had a forge in our backyard where our boys have hammered out swords. And we took down a garden fence one time, and my 12-year-old boy at the time said that he says, hey, Dad, he says, I could make a suspension bridge in the backyard between the two trees. Can I do that? I'm like, go have at it. We've had trampolines and pools, trampolines next to the pool. We built a zip line with a 20-foot ledge, and my son was up there, and he says, Dad, he says, I'll bet I could jump from this platform onto the trampoline and make it into the pool. I was like, knock yourself out, Luke. Just do it when I'm not around. The thing is that our society has become just safety freaks in the last, 10, 20 years. I mean, haven't it? I mean, I remember, we were playing on the playground when our kids were growing up, and we let our kids do everything. They climbed all over the thing, and they were climbing out onto the outside of the little fort on top of the roof and stuff like that. And this mom whips out her cell phone, and she's ready to call the police on my son. I'm like, whoa, wait, lady, what are you doing? I'm right here. She's like, well, he's not supposed to be doing that. And I'm like, well, who cares? I'm his dad. I mean, it's like, if you want to, shelter your kids and make them geldings, I'm fine with that. But, don't do that to my kid as well. So we are so safety freakish. And let me tell you guys, safety is not a biblical value. If you are teaching your kids safety, you're not teaching the biblical value. Your kids need to know what an adventure is, because when they grow up, they need to know that following God is an adventure. Okay? David was a 12-year-old kid, and he was on an adventure with God. You know that they think David was probably about 12, 13 years old when he killed Goliath? Do you know how they know that he was about 12 years old when he killed Goliath? Do you know the story? What did he do with Goliath after he killed him? He chopped off his head. And what did he do with it? He took it back to his tent. He's like, this is my head. I killed this guy. I get to keep the head. He's a 12-year-old on an adventure with God. Okay? And we need to just get off of this. Now, this is going to freak out some of your wives. Okay? So you need to have a conversation with them. But you need to understand that if you want your boys to grow up to be young men who follow God on adventure, then safety has got to not be your primary value. And if they're out on an adventure like this, this could have been anywhere. It's in Kentucky, but it could have been Devil's Lake. It could have been something like that. They need to have an adventure, which kind of leads to our next one. You want to comment on any of this at all?
I'm just gonna say, there you might wonder, where do you start, right? We just need to be intentional. We need to create an environment for our kids to have adventures. We need to shut off the TV. That's not the environment to have an adventure. That's like experiencing somebody else's adventure. So we need to get the TVs off. We need to find other families. Like Mike was saying, we share this common value of getting our kids out. Find other families that share the same value as you, and then just start letting go, even little bits at a time. Start letting go, unhook that leash, and let them go.
And adventure leads to, sometimes there's consequences to adventures, okay? Our families share the same values, and our son shares the same passions as well, like a passion for fire, okay? What boys don't share a passion for fire? And our boys would have this habit of stealing away to these woods outside of town, and there they would make a campfire, and, you know, at 13, 14 years old, they would do experiments with the campfire. Like, what happens when you throw an aerosol can into the campfire? You know, and I often wish that we would live on the outskirts of town, or like on a farm somewhere where the boys could do this, but we don't. We live in West Bend, in the city proper. And so we've always told the boys, hey, if you do this, there's going to be consequences to your behavior. If you light off fireworks in the city limits, we would show them the sign at the police station, $180 fine for lighting off fireworks in the city limits. You know the consequences here, right? And one day, my wife was working. My sons had stolen away. He was with Greg's son, and they're in the woods doing their thing. And my wife got a call, and they said, "Mrs. Moran, this is the West Bend Police Department. We have your sons in custody, and we need you to come down and pick them up." And our response to the police was, could you just hold on to them for a while? Like, we want them to kind of stew and kind of figure this one out. And when we picked them up, we didn't lay into them. We didn't tell you, I told you, sorry. We just let the consequences stand where they are. And they all had a $180 fine. They all had to pay that. And we knew we did the right thing one day when I was washing dishes. And I heard, you know, my 14-year-old son say, "Consequences suck." And I'm like, that's good. That's good that you know consequences suck. And God, if you look at God in Deuteronomy in chapter 27, 28, and 29, 30, he's always saying, these are my boundaries. If you cross over my boundaries, then there are consequences. That's just going to happen. There are consequences to crossing the boundaries. Okay? And what do we do as parents? We try to shield our kids from the consequences all the time. And when you do that, you are doing them no favors. You got that? If you shield your kids from the consequences of their behavior, you are doing them no favors. We call our kids teachers all the time. So you get that email. You guys got that email from the teacher, right? Your boy's misbehaving or something like that. And we're like, we write them back and we're like, we are behind you 100%. You do whatever you have to do, okay? And we will follow up on it at home. And inevitably, the teachers write us back, and they're like, "You've got to be kidding me. This is not what I encountered." Usually, if I'm talking to a parent about their son, all they do is go to the defense of their kid. And it's like, you've got to stop doing that. You've got to let your kids feel the consequences of their behavior, okay? Is that when they're young, because when they grow up, they've got to know that there are consequences.
So there's just a little picture. Just so you know what happened after this, it truly was an aerosol can, and it was pretty awesome, I must say. So one other thing to share, like Mike said, his son said consequences suck. But what I would say is not allowing our kids to experience consequences is what would really suck for them. Because if we don't, like Mike shared, we're setting them up to fail. In their adult lives, if they haven't experienced consequences early on, they're going to experience them regardless, even as adults, but they're not going to know what to do with them. You know, think about what our society would be like if men learned early on the value of consequences growing up, right? So Proverbs 13:24 says, and I'm sure you've heard this before, "Whoever spares the rod hates his son, but he who loves him is diligent to discipline him." That's saying that if we don't allow our kids to experience consequences, basically we're saying that we hate our kids. because we're not allowing them the growth that happens with those consequences early on. So moving from that, we've got tradition. Why tradition? You know, tradition speaks to what we hold to be important and what we value. And it allows our sons to hear and feel what we determine is important. And it lays a groundwork or a foundation for them to start and understand their own values. Kind of what Crawford was talking about with building roots. You know, it's a little bit different from the verse he was talking about, but it helps build these roots, something that they can be rooted in, something that they can start from, some kind of foundation. Now, we probably all have some sort of tradition that's been passed down from generation to generation. Some traditions are very surface. They don't really have a whole lot of meaning, but there are also traditions that have a lot of depth and a lot of meaning for them. So to be intentional here with traditions is to create meaningful traditions that our boys can hold on to and that they can learn from. And something I think that is especially as important is some of those traditions should, for our boys, should mark the passage of time, and they should speak directly to the coming of age for our boys. Now, some traditions that we've done as a family, and I will admit right now, these aren't all my idea. A lot of these were my wife's idea, okay? But it's a partnership, and we were raising the boys together. One of the things that we do is we get a Christmas tree from the same place every year. It's a Christmas tree farm that I went to when I was a kid growing up. It's this cool place with a trout stream running through it, and they've got animals, and you chop down your own tree. That's a tradition for us. It's something that our boys look forward to. Kind of in the same vein around Christmas is my wife wraps all of our Christmas books. And come December, the kids get to unwrap a book, and we read it as a family. We don't have the, you know, the little kid books anymore. They kind of mature as our kids are maturing. We like to read together, out loud, sit together as a family. That's a tradition. And then as far as coming of age, when our boys turn 5, they got their own fishing pole. Like, not the Mickey Mouse fishing pole, but the real, you know, the real deal. Even though only one of my boys now has stuck with fishing, they get a fishing pole at 5. One of the things that they really have looked forward to is when they turn 10, they've gotten their own pocket knife. Now, my name is D4, and so we did this fun thing with the pocket knife. We had each of the little ends engraved with a D. So we have 4 Ds on that knife, and I'll talk about those 4 Ds and what we use them for a little bit later on in the talk. But that's something that our kids can look forward to when they turn 10. And after my first one, the older brother got to give the knife as a gift to the 10-year-old. And then also we've done this thing called Passport to Purity, where it gives our kids, gives me an opportunity one-on-one with one of our kids once they turn about 12, 13 years old to just go off for a weekend, talk about what it means to be pure, live a pure life, sexually pure, relationally pure. So that's a tradition. So we need to think about the traditions that we have as a family. Can they be used to teach values, to teach our values, and to teach God's values into our boys? And if not, are there things that we can change? Are there new traditions that we can start? Remember, we need to be intentional about it. So one tradition in particular that I'd like to share is a tradition that our church has started. And it's called Rite of Passage. And Rite of Passage addresses a major gap in our culture. Right, in our culture today, we don't really have a way for boys to decide or understand when they actually become a man, right? Some boys will say, well, when I get my driver's license, then I'm a man, or when I turn 18, or when I have my first drink, or when I have sex for the first time. There's no concrete point in time where they say, I was a boy, now I'm a man. Most cultures have this ceremony or this rite where they pass from being a boy to a man. But because we don't have that in our culture, boys are always floundering. They're always wondering. They're always trying to understand. They have this identity crisis. Am I still a boy or am I a man? So our church started this ceremony called Rite of Passage. And it's a top secret ceremony. I'm just going to share a few things with you because we want it to be something that our kids are looking forward to, but they don't really know what it all entails. But it's an opportunity for our boys, high school age boys, to be assigned a mentor. That mentor steps through with them through their lives for a couple months along with their dad or guardian. And then we have, in the summertime, we have a weekend ceremony where our kids go through some challenges. They have to deal with some consequences.
This is all out in the woods, too.
Yes.
This is far away.
Yep, far away. I just have to share this. There was one year where a car was driven, picked up one of the boys. The mom was out to say goodbye, and she was going to give him a hug, and the mentor said, no. No hugs. Sorry. This isn't about you. This is about the boy, right? So she had to go back on the porch. They blindfolded the boy, so he didn't have a clue where they were going. And I think there were tears involved on the mom's part.
Sure there was.
But that's the way it is. So I'm not going to tell you what actually happened, because that's top secret. But it gives us a chance to allow our boys to be mentored by somebody besides ourselves. It gives the dads a chance to speak into their kids' lives, their boys' lives. And then we also have some service opportunities with that rite of passage. And then the expectation is, after this weekend, these boys are now declared to be men. The expectation is that they're a new man. Not only are they going to be looked on and treated as a man by other men in the church, but they're also expected to behave like men. And they're expected to accept admonishment when childish ways creep in. Mm-hmm. Oh, I forgot I had this slide. So here's the pocket knife. This is my 10-year-old. He's my last one to receive the pocket knife. This is my wife and I. And so that's what it is.
The I is for involvement. And I'm not going to spend too much time on this, but most of you guys know that if you want to have influence into your kids' lives, if you want to have access in their life, you need to be involved, okay? Basically, what you're doing when you're involved in your kids' lives, whether it's through coaching, whether it's through hunting, whether it's whatever you do together, playing games, reading to them, what you're doing is you are building a relational bridge into their life that then gives you access when you need to, okay? If you don't have the involvement, okay, and then you need to be able to speak into your son's life, You just laid out the authority card, okay? I'm the dad, and that's it, okay? But when you're involved in their life, when you've been spending time with them, when you've been coaching them, when you've been spending great relational time, you have that bridge that you've spent time with building, and that gives you access, which then gives you influence into their life when you need it. There's I have a verse there. These are some of the things. We've always gone hiking with our kids. Saturday mornings is just my time to take the kids, let my wife go out and have a coffee with a friend, do whatever. We go into the woods, we make fires, roast hot dogs. We've done that when our kids were little. This is the Thessalonians. He says, for you know that we dealt with each of you as a father deals with his own children, encouraging, comforting, and urging you to live lives worthy of God who calls you into his kingdom of glory. There's no way that you can do the encouraging and comforting and urging if you have not first spent the time with your son. Okay, so you need to have lots and lots of involvement. The next one goes to obligation. Obligation basically speaks to the sense of responsibility. We need to allow our kids to have a sense of responsibility. I'm just backing up here because I think I'm making the speaker hot. In our society, kids aren't expected to do anything anymore, right? And we have always just stopped giving our kids any kind of allowance or anything like that right around 10 or 11. So if they want to earn money, they've got to mow the lawn, they've got to shovel the walk, they've got to do any of that. We've helped our kids make flyers to distribute around the neighborhood so that they can watch pets, so that they can mow lawns, so they can do all of that. And we've always told them that if you want something, you've got to work for it yourself. A sense of obligation is a great thing for a kid to have and to grow up with. And one time when our son was 14, he was looking for a job. You know, it's tough. It's tough to find a job when you're 14, 15 years old. And we were trying to help him with that. One day, it was like right after the new year, we were driving on the main strip in West Bend, and we went by this tax office. And I was like, I remembered that there is this tax office, and every year they have a guy out dancing with a Statue of Liberty. And I'm like, Luke, that's it. You can do that. And he signed up and he got the job. There's my son Luke. First job. did it all through the polar vortex last year. You know, you guys remember the polar vortex? And what happened is that was the worst job he ever had. He hated it. But what that job did is that then led to another job at the bike shop where now, you know, the guy was really impressed. Like, you were out there dancing during the polar vortex? I got to hand it to you, kid. You got balls. So, you know, I'm just quoting his boss there. Okay, sorry about that slip. You know, and so now he's got a better job. And he's working. And see, the thing is that we just stopped giving our kids anything. We don't give them iPods. We don't give them iPhones. If they want any of that, they've got to buy it themselves. They've got to, which means they've got to earn the money themselves. And I had somebody come up to me at church the other day, and they said, how do you get your kids to work? All your kids work, and they have jobs. We can't do that in our family. And I'm like, it's easy. We don't give them anything. If they want something, then they've got to work for it. And it gives them this sense of responsibility. My son, when he was a senior year, paid down cash, $7,000, on his first car. And that made him feel great. That was his car. It wasn't given to him, anything like that. And it then gives them a sense of responsibility. So now my son is 20. He's in college, and he's paying for it on his own. And he said, he's studying. And I'm like, PJ, I'm so proud of you. You're studying so hard. He's like, are you kidding? I'm not throwing this education away. I drained my bank account to pay for this. And I'm like, right on, buddy. You've understood the sense of obligation.
Yeah. And I'll just add something to that as well. My 16-year-old is in a lot of sports, so he doesn't have a job yet because he's got a lot of school stuff going on. But my 18-year-old, he had this really cushy, nice job at a coffee shop, and realized at some point that maybe it was a little cushier, or he was taking the cushiness of the job, wasn't doing all the things that he was supposed to do. He ended up getting canned, and he was devastated. That wasn't what he was expecting. He figured he'd be doing that, earning money, you know, making latte art and doing all the stuff that he loves to do and he's great at it. But he lost a job. So there was a consequence of not doing the things that he really knew he was supposed to be doing. But then also realized that I need to go get another job. I can't just sit here. I can't do nothing. So he ended up having an opportunity to get a job at the Habitat for Humanity Restore. So now instead of sitting there and making coffee and smelling coffee and getting to talk to people, he's hauling sinks and hauling doors and cutting stuff up and working a whole lot harder, but he realizes the value of that obligation. The last one we want to talk about is nobility. This is, in my mind, this is kind of the crux of the whole matter of being intentional with our kids. Adventure, consequences, tradition, obligation, involvement, those are all things that we want our boys to experience so we can provide this framework upon which manhood can really be hung, right, can be built. And we need to be intentional or purposeful in seeing those things happen. Nobility requires intentional teaching through direction, giving our kids direction, like direction as in point them this way, right? Instruction. How do you do things? How do you handle situations? How do you respond to this? How do you respond to that? But mostly by example, living by example. And I think that nobility really speaks to character, or what am I characterized by, right? When people think of me, what is it that they think? So what am I characterized by? What do I want my boys to be characterized by? So Proverbs 22:6, and I've read this so many times, and I always think, well, wait a minute, this isn't even true, because I teach my kids to, you know, put the toilet seat down or shut the dishwasher when they're getting something out of it so I don't knock my shins on in the dark when I'm walking through the kitchen. They don't always do what I teach them to do. This says, train up a child in the way he should go. Even when he is old, he will not depart from it. So what does that mean? I think training our boys up in the way they should go means that we need to teach into their character. We need to help them understand what it means to be a man so that when they become a man, they can take what they've learned and move it forward. That's what it means to not depart from it. So when I think about the word nobility, I was trying to figure out, you know, what do I say about nobility? And I was thinking about the word chivalry. right? We hear about the code of chivalry that knights back in the medieval times had to go through. And so I was looking up some things, and I won't read all these because it's kind of a long list, but some of the things in this code of chivalry, this came from the 12th century. Fear God and maintain his church. Protect the weak and defenseless. Refrain from being offensive. Live by honor and glory. Fight for the welfare of all. Keep faith. Respect the honor of women. At all times, speak the truth. Now, in our home, though we're still trying to figure out how to consistently teach this, we've taken a verse. This is from 1 Corinthians 16, verses 13 and 14. It says, "Be on your guard, stand firm in the faith, be men of courage, be strong, do everything in love." We're using this as our code of chivalry for our boys. And the way that we're trying to teach it is, again, I mentioned the fact, you know, my name is D4. So we took four D's. We took four words that start with the letter D, and we tried to plug them into this verse. So the first letter is, or the first word is define. Be defined by what God says. So when you be on your guard, it means don't listen to what the world is saying, because the world is saying all these crazy things about you. You need to be on your guard. You need to be ready to hear them and then ready to say, no, that's not who God says I am. So be defined by what God has to say. The second one is be a disciple. Stand firm in the faith. Learn what it means to follow Jesus and be a disciple of Jesus. The third D, along with be men of courage and be strong, is dare. Dare to be different. Dare to step out and do the right thing when you see other people not doing the right thing. One of my favorite quotes from VeggieTales movies, if you're all any fans of VeggieTales, VeggieTales Esther, cousin Mordecai says, "Never be afraid to do what's right." So dare. And the last one is devote. Do everything in love. Be devoted to God and be devoted to Jesus' teaching where he said, love God and love others. Now, something else that Christy and I really desire for our boys is for them to be selfless and to learn what it means to give, to be sacrificial. It's not just our idea, it's God's idea as well. You know, Jesus said that when he came not to be served, but to serve and give his life up as a ransom for many. So we've been trying to teach our boys what does it mean to be intentional about serving. So what we're doing is we regularly have people at our house, not friends of the family, not other family members, but people who are needy, people who need to be served, people who aren't willing to give of themselves, and so we have to give to them. And I think that's really another kind of adventure because that's not natural, especially for boys, I've found. But it's going to help them learn to adapt. It helps them to learn and realize that, you know, life isn't just about them. So we all need to decide what's important to us, right? And what we want our boys to be characterized by. How are we going to intentionally teach these things to our boys? So when we think about action, we've got adventure, consequences, tradition, involvement, obligation, and nobility. You know, the ball's in your court and your boys are waiting.
I want to just say that this last one, nobility, Greg does that really well. He's very intentional with his boys, as you can tell. And I am the direct beneficiary of that intentionality and nobility because, like I said, his oldest son is dating my daughter. And let me tell you, he treats her like a queen. Like, he is so good with her and they've been praying together. And they're trying to figure out ways that they can serve because those are all things that they have infused in their kids. And it just reminds me of something that I heard Stuart and Jill Briscoe say. That is that if you are single, you run towards Jesus as fast as you can. And if while you are running to Jesus as fast as you can, you see someone next to you keeping pace with you, then you may want to get to know them. And that's exactly kind of what's happened with Maggie and Tyson. So Greg does that really well, and I feel like I'm a direct beneficiary. So any questions we have, like about, you know, 5-10 minutes here left, if you guys want to share anything, any best practices that you have discovered in your raising boys, we'd be happy to do that. The rite of passage is awesome. There is nothing in our society that demarcates when a young, you know, boy becomes a man. And this is something that's full of meaning and significance. Usually at the ceremony, there's not a dry eye in the place. And these kids look back on this. And after the ceremony, and there's prep work that leads up to, there's a couple months, 3 months that lead up to it. After the ceremony, all that community of men, they then look at that boy, who is now a man, as a man, and they expect him to be a man. And the guys who came up with this ceremony got the idea from this book by Robert Lewis, Raising a Modern Day Knight. And he talks about this in there. And we would love to, you know, walk you through that. I can't do it here. It's being recorded. We'd have to kill you if we should say more. But a lot of secrecy. The boys are all, you know, sworn to secrecy so they can't pass it on to their younger brothers or anything like that. But it's a wonderful, wonderful tool that our church has come up with. Yes.
Do you want to why don't you repeat that question?
Okay. Yeah, the question is, you talked about not giving your kids stuff. Have you come across an issue with grandparents or well-meaning, you know, aunts and uncles with your kids? Yes, we have had to deal with that, and that sometimes that requires a sit down with mom and dad and saying, "Listen, we're trying to teach them something, and what you're doing is by coming to their rescue and out of the kindness of your heart, you have good intentions. We understand that, but actually, what you're doing is you're undermining what it is that we're trying to instill in our boys at this point. So we're just going to ask it that, you know, if you could hold off." At least, maybe you know they provide for some of it, but not for all of it.
If I can just add to that too, you know, by saying that, sometimes you're going to hear, "Oh, well, you think we didn't raise our kids the right way? You think you're doing it better than us?" And one of the things that we've been able to share is that when you give things to our kids, they remember those things for a couple days, right? Maybe a couple weeks, maybe a little bit longer. But if the things that you give them are time spent with you or opportunities to be with you, that's stuff that they remember forever. And I'll let them give that stuff to my kids all day long.
When you're allowing the kids to and your boys to bear the consequences of their action, their behavior, at what point do you step in?
Or do you need to
step in? That's a good question. I would have to think about that. We're pretty hardcore in our family. You know, it's like if someone has done something, it's like you've got to bear this. You know, you can come alongside of them, walk with them, grieve with them, you know, but ultimately consequences are the best teacher that there is. And so there may be times when you come in, you have to come in with grace. If you have a child that's dealing with, you know, drug addiction or something like that, you know, there might be a situation there where you're like, okay, I'm going to help you out this one time, but after that, you're on your own. I think really what happens is we just want to, as fathers, as parents, want to swoop into the rescue of our kids, and when we do that, we aren't helping them in any way. And as a pastor, I see this all the time. I see parents wanting to rescue their kids from the consequences of their behavior, and you just need to let them, you know, feel it. Otherwise, when they're adults, they won't know what consequences are. I think, Greg, you had an experience where you talked to a teacher or something like that where she said something like, kids don't understand consequences.
Yeah, it wasn't a teacher, actually. It's somebody from a past church that I went to. She's a defense attorney. And her license plate says, therefore. If you ever have heard about, you know, the letters that Apostle Paul wrote, there's a lot of therefores in there. And you say, well, if you see the word therefore, you have to ask your question, what's the therefore? And so she put therefore as her license plate. And all of her clients ask, why do you have that? And so she gets to step out and say, because if you did this, therefore this is happening. And most of her clients say, oh, I didn't realize that there were consequences to my actions. And that's why we need defense attorneys to begin with, because you've got these people experiencing consequences for things that they've done, not realizing that there's going to be a consequence.
That's a good question. If there's anybody has... Okay, so this man who shall be unnamed said Right. And so his wife's concern is safety. And I think maybe there's some good reading out there, like Wild at Heart, something like that. If you could sit down with your wife and say, hey, listen, this is part and parcel of being a boy. A boy needs to stretch his wings. A boy needs to figure it out for himself. You know, a boy needs to, you know, just go out and live an adventure. So if you come in, again, if you swoop in and rescue them from this, they're never going to get a chance to find out what they can do. And so I would just say, you know, if it's an ongoing conversation that you have where you're constantly having to move the needle, I think, with your wife. But again, I think our value system is formed so much by the world. And the world around us has become just safety freakish. And we just don't see that as a value that's in the scriptures. If your wife's a believer, I would say, okay, you gotta show me from scriptures where safety is a biblical value, because I see that risk is actually a biblical value. Risk is just a more earthy word. Perhaps what I would say is, so there's a traumatic accident in the past that's preventing her from allowing the boys to risk. There may be things that she's comfortable with, and there may be things that she's not comfortable with. I would say, let's discover some things that we're both comfortable with. Like maybe our kids, you know, we're okay having our kids take a canoe trip on their own down the Wisconsin River. That's not being hit, you know, by a linebacker or anything like that. It's a little bit different, but there's still risk. There's still an element of going out on an adventure, but it's something that you two have a conversation you're able to be comfortable with. Does that make sense? Okay. Thanks, you guys. We have some resources up here if you guys want to take a look. These are some good books.